Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 147, and we are in Genesis chapter 21. I just wanted to mention something about Lot. Last time I mentioned about Lot and the scripture that was later on to be recorded in the New Testament about him, about his righteousness. And I mentioned that it was in Hebrews chapter 11 by Paul, but actually it was Peter. In 2 Peter chapter 2 and verses 7 and 8, where Peter is referring to Lot as being a just person. And so in chapter 2 and verse 7, we read about Peter, that he was delivered, we read, and delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked. For that righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. And then he adds, for the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations and to reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment. And there in Sodom and Gomorrah all that happened just the same way. Anyway, now and then, you know, sometimes you mention something, you think it is in a different book, and unless you check it, you get the impression that you know it. That's the reason for, as some say, check, double check, and triple check. Anyway, from this point we're going to continue, and last time we were in, again, as I said, in Genesis, in chapter 21, and as we read, when Isaac was weaned, and the custom was to nurse children until they are two or three, and oftentimes it was 3 years old, and after that, when they are 3 years old, they reach the age of maturity to have a big party. And that custom continued for many, many, many centuries. In the days of Josephus and beyond that, that custom was still going on. That is, in the days of the Second Temple. Because it was a great celebration in the family, a great achievement. And a son is now given to the father. And oftentimes, even in modern times, I remember when I was a child, when you reach age three, that's in essence when the mother spends a little bit less time with the child and gives him to the father so he can begin teaching him the law of God, you know, the Torah. So obviously, it becomes a great celebration for the family. It's a great, important milestone in the life of the child. And Abraham was very happy again, as all fathers were in those days, that his child was weaned, I can spend more time with him and begin to teach him the ways of God. Of course, they don't understand much at that time, but they understand enough to begin to have a relationship with their Creator. And this is what you read here in verse 8, in chapter 21, and the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. And that was a custom in the Middle East, and was a custom for many centuries to come, and to this very day, there are still many who keep that very custom. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar. Now, that's her son in essence, because she adopted him, according to the custom. But now you see a separation there, and obviously, because of the first problem they had in the beginning, while she was still pregnant, apparently the tension continued between the two, though not as bad as before that. But it seems to be that Hagar didn't learn the lesson very thoroughly, and so we still see a problem here, not on the part of Hagar, but on the part of her son. That is an active problem. But obviously, his mother had to do something with it. And Sarah, in verse 9, we read, saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne unto Abraham, making sport. Now, it's very interesting the way it is in Hebrew here. In verse 8, you read, and Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. Now, Isaac is laughter, Yitzhak. And here in verse 9, we read that the son that was born to the Egyptian, Ishmael, was making sport. Well, the word sport in Hebrew is mitzachek, just like Yitzhak. In other words, making fun, you know, laughing. And so you see there the play on words there and the correlation between the two. So probably Ishmael is thinking, well, here's Isaac, his name is Laughter, and so he starts laughing at him. And obviously Sarah took it personally, because it was also a personal attack on her in that sense, that when God told her she was going to have a son, she laughed, and then he told her, you're going to call your son Laughter, and here this kid is making fun of that kid, you know, laughing at him. And obviously she noticed that, and she took it personally, and she got pretty furious, pretty angry, to make this statement. Wherefore, in verse 10 we read, she said unto Abraham, cast out this bondwoman and her son. So you can imagine how angry she was when she was confronted with that. And she said, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. So he's making fun of Isaac, you know, whose name is Laughter. He's laughing at him, and I don't want him to hang around with, you know, with my laughter, of my Isaac. And unfortunately, as I said, Hagar controlled her behavior and taught Ishmael to do likewise and taught him respect, realizing that she still is, though she is the wife of Abraham and bore him his firstborn, she is still the handmaid of Sarah. She belonged to Sarah. And her son also belonged to Sarah, according to the custom. So you see an attitude in a mother and in a son that unfortunately continues to this very day. People who like to taunt the children of promise. They're not aware of it, but they're still doing it to this very day, and they have this rivalry that at times becomes violent and creates a lot of unnecessary misery for both of them, and there is no need for it. If they just learn the lesson and live in peace, well, that time will come in the future. At this point, we see a conflagration there, sort of a mini war, and Abraham obviously is not very happy with it. And so, in verse 11, and the thing was very grievous in Abraham's sight, on account of his son. Now, later on, in many, many centuries later on, in the days of the Apostle Paul, he referred to this very encounter and this very conflict, this very problem that occurred in the family of Abraham between a son of promise, whose name was Laughter, and a son whose name is Ishmael. That means God heard him. And if God heard him, he should have heard God too and not make fun of his brother. Well, that was not the nature of Ishmael yet, but it will be in the future. And so in the book of Galatians, when the Apostle Paul wants to explain to the Galatians a spiritual matter, but the difference between the children of promise and those who are not, and their attitude, and the Galatians themselves were not children of promise, and yet God grafted them and made them a part of the commonwealth of Israel, just like in essence Ishmael is being grafted and Hagar are being grafted into the commonwealth of the household of Abraham, and therefore they should have behaved appropriately. And the Galatians too had the same problem, in essence, like Ishmael. They began to listen to other voices, and they began to go astray, and they began to even have attitudes, wrong attitudes, toward the people of God. And so the Apostle Paul is referring to this matter here that happened in the days of Isaac and Ishmael and Abraham and Sarah, and he's making a point here how God feels about it. And so he tells them in verse 21, tell me, you who desire to be under the law, in chapter 4 of Galatians, you who desire to be under the law, that is under the bondage. You see, Hagar was in bondage. Though she was the wife of Abraham, she was still a maid. In other words, she had a mistress, and she was not free to do whatever she wants. And that also was in regard to her attitude. She could not just behave any way she wanted, and she could not have allowed her son to behave that way either, even though he was the firstborn of Abraham. And people that don't learn those kind of lessons, well, they're going to have to pay for it. And so he's bringing that to the attention of the Galatians also. That they were the children of the bond women, you know, of the Gentiles. They were not Israelites. They were not the free Israelites, so to speak. They were sinners of the Gentiles. God called them, and they should behave appropriately because of that. Being grateful instead of arrogant and haughty, and they began to develop also contempt toward the very law of God, the law of the Spirit, and began to act as if they are still in bondage. And so that's what he's telling them. You know, you desire to be under the law, that is, under the penalty of the law. We're not talking about, and he's not talking here, about the law is done away with, you know, as those people who still are in bondage and think they are free think, you know, the law is done away with, I don't want to be under it, that's, you know, that's bondage. Now, this is not what Paul is talking about. He was telling them that Christ gave them freedom, and it's not freedom from the law, it's freedom to obey the law, but freedom from the penalty of the law, so that when they're obedient and stumble, God will have grace on them and forgive them. But they wanted to go because of misconceptions there and preaching that came from the wrong quarters, mainly Judaizers, that did not understand the grace of God and the spirit of the law and the liberty that is in the law while obeying the law, not disobeying the law. And they were trying to bring them under the bondage of the yoke of the do's and don'ts, and mainly that of the Jewish community and their interpretation of every little detail of it. And to begin with, not many of the laws that were given to them was because of their rebellious, you know, nature and spirit. And God would not have imposed many of these laws upon them had they been obedient and walking in the spirit of the law and had their heart circumcised. And so it was also with Ishmael. Life would have been better for him and for Hagar, and they would have had more freedom, and they would have had more blessings had they been grateful and obedient and showing the right attitude. And they did not. And so that's the reason why Sarah, she brings that issue. Well, she's a bondmaid, you know, and she's my I'm her mistress. She's under me. She's not behaving herself, and I have the power over her, so throw her out. You see? And that's what happens with people who do not obey the law of God in the spirit. They have to obey it in the letter, and they're suffering the consequences of it. And so he says in verse 22, "For it is written that Abraham had two sons." You see, he had two sons. He doesn't say Abraham had an illegitimate son, as some ignoramuses are saying, you know, that Abraham had no business marrying Hagar. That's against the law. And that's not against the law. That's against the attitude, you know, of those who do not know the law. But that's not against the law. That was the law. And God let on govern that law by his law. In other words, govern this practice of multiple marriages by giving them instructions what to do when you have more than one wife. And he never said that it is against the law. In Deuteronomy, you can read it. If a man has two wives, you know, it's taken for granted if he has two wives, because many people have two wives and three and four, how to treat the second one with respect and honor. And if her son is the firstborn, he should receive the birthright. And here, according to that law, Ishmael should have received it. But again, God to begin with did not mean for him to do it. And so he says, Abraham had two sons. And if he had two sons, he had two wives also. And it was not an illegitimate one, as some people like to call it, because they don't understand the scriptures, but they rely on their own background. And the one by a bond woman, the other by a free woman, but both of them were women, and both of them were wives. Only one had the preeminence, as according to the custom of the time. In verse 24, but he who was of a bondwoman was born according to the flesh. You know, the desire of the flesh, where there was no promise from God. That's what he means by that, because both of them were from the flesh. But one of them was a child of promise, and the other one was, well, he wanted to have a child, and that's basically, it was a desire of a human origin and not of God. Well, that's the difference between the two. And so he said, one according to the flesh, and he of the free woman through promise. And then verse 24, he continues, which things are symbolic. So he's using it as a symbolic lesson to teach them something they're not aware of, and because of that they were behaving the way they were. At the end of the chapter we'll find out what was their problem, and so and what point he's trying to drive also. So he says in verse 24, these things are symbolic. In other words, he's using them as a metaphor, for these are the two covenants. Now, nowhere in the Bible does it say that Hagar and her son and Isaac and his mother Sarah were symbolic of these things. Well, this is what Paul is using it, and is inspired by God at this point to make a point through that, and in particular to the Galatians, because they themselves were children of bond women to begin with. That is, spiritually speaking, and also physically, because they were not the people of God. When they're not the people of God, you're in bondage to sin. And so that becomes very meaningful to them. And so he says, these things are symbolic, for these are the two covenants, the one from Sinai, which was, and that is, which gives birth to bondage, which is Hagar. And the one from Sinai made people under the law. They sinned, and the law demanded death penalty in many cases, or other kind of punishments, or other kinds of do's and don'ts that you had to do. You know, if you did this, you had to do certain things, and you had to bring things to the priest, and you had to go through many rituals. A lot of those things was because people were not willing to be obedient to the law of God from the heart. Abraham didn't have to do that. Isaac didn't have to go through that, all these rituals, and Jacob didn't go through all these rituals, and Joseph didn't, and all the men that worship God, or the women that worship God, didn't have to do many of these things. So a lot of these added instructions that were given to Israel were added because of their rebellion, their attitude. You know, they insisted on remaining like little children. Well, God had to deal with them like little children. So many of the laws that were given, among the so-called 613 laws, and there are many, many of them, were related to the temple, were related to the sacrifices, were related to the rituals, to the tabernacle prior to that, and they were basically related to people who are insisting of being children. And so obviously, when you are an adult and you're being treated as a child, you are in bondage. You see? You can do this, you can do that, or do this, or do that. You see, that's bondage. That's not freedom. While if you are a trustworthy person, a mature person, well, you are given freedom to do many things. And so this is the point that he's trying to make between the two. And that became also a problem. Well, the Jews did not understand it, why many of these laws were given to them. Instead of understanding it, that it is because of their behavior and the stiff-necked, you know, nature and rebellious attitude, that many of these laws were added for them, specifically because of their attitude, as God himself made it plainly in several places. In Jeremiah, he said that, in Amos, that he said he gave them laws that were not good for them. In other words, had they been mature in their attitude and their behavior, he would not have given them many of these things that, in essence, became like bondage to them. And so when they came to the point of the circumcision, as we discussed it very thoroughly many lessons ago, we talked about the circumcision, chapter 15, what was the nature of it, many of the teachings of Paul that he was trying to explain to them, also to the community, that a lot of those things, because the Gentiles were willing to be what the Israelites were not willing to be to begin with, that is to circumcise their heart, they did not have to do a lot of those things that were binding on the Jewish community in terms of the ritualistic do's and don'ts, which were from God, which were commanded by God, which God didn't say they were done away with, but it did not require it of those who, to begin with, were like Abraham, came into the faith of Abraham, where they were willing to obey God and circumcise their heart, and therefore, just like Abraham was not commanded, nor Isaac, nor Jacob, nor many other righteous people after them, to do all these do's and don'ts, so to speak, of ritualistic manner for purification and sacrificial and, matters and things like that, because they were willing to circumcise their heart. Therefore, also the Gentiles that God was calling, since they already showed that attitude, they were obedient to the law, like Cornelius and many others, and there was no need for them to treat them like children. You see?
Now, on the other hand, Paul was never talking about the spiritual law that God gave Israel, that, you know, all the statutes and judgments, or the holy days, or Sabbath, or whatever, that was done away with, because that was applicable to all of them. And so people that did not realize that, got confused. In other words, people do not have background, as Peter said, you know, they're unlearned. They have a difficult time understanding what is really going on here. And so they go from one extreme to the other. The Jew would say, you've got to keep the whole thing, you see, forgetting the reason why though many of those things were given. And the Gentiles get to the point where they departed from God and they said, no, yes, nothing is for us. We just live by faith. And neither one is correct. And so this is one explanation that Paul is trying to give to Gentiles that began to think because they were being misled, and generally by those who were of the circumcision, that in order to serve God, they have to be just like them, in bondage. Of course, I didn't use that word, but they have to do everything just like they do, you know, keep the whole law of Moses. And so he's trying to explain to them this matter here, about the two covenants, one from Mount Sinai, which gives birth to bondage, which is Hagar. So he's using that example in verse 25, for this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, and corresponds to Jerusalem. Now, Arabia in ancient times was not Saudi Arabia, because Saudi Arabia is a modern terminology anyway, and that territory is called Arabia today is the modern terminology, and it's not an ancient name for that place. And so people get confused when they come to this terminology, and there are those people who think that Mount Sinai was in Arabia. When they see some evidence there, that looks like the Mount Sinai was there, and so they believe it's Mount Arabia. Well, in ancient times, Sinai was called Arabia, because Arabs lived there. That's the reason. The Westerners, that's what it means. Aravim in Hebrew, or Erev, evening, means west, because that's when the sun goes down. And so all those, from the point of view of Mesopotamia and Babylon, that lived west of the rivers were called Westerners. You see? And then that terminology of Arabians, Aravim, Arabs, became applied to all those people that lived west of the Euphrates. And today, you know, you say west of the Mississippi, you know, then you are Westerners. Now, on the other side, you know, you are called Easterners. And so this is what it was there. So Arabia was basically one of the names of Mount Sinai. And this is what he's talking about. Not Mount Sinai, that is the wilderness of Sinai and all those areas. And that's where Ishmael ended, in that territory. Because he was in Beersheba, and then he went down, further down toward Egypt. And in between, the territory was called Arabia because Arabs lived there. Westerners, that is. And so he says, for this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia and corresponds to Jerusalem, which now is and is in bondage with her children. In bondage, you know, if you behave like a child, you're going to be in bondage in that sense. You're going to have all the do's and don'ts. But when you grow up, you behave like an adult. Well, many of those things are not necessary anymore. Why? Because you are lawless? No, because now you're obedient. You do it from the heart. So you don't need to be told, do this and do that, or don't do this and don't do that. You see, it's not being apart from the law. It's within the law, but you are doing it from the heart. So you don't need all the little details, you know. There is a law. You know, tie your shoelaces, brush your teeth, do this, do that, do the other thing. Well, you do it anyway, so you don't need to be told those things. You see? And you don't need a supervision. You don't need somebody to watch over you. It doesn't mean that you are free to be lawless. And so this is the point he's trying to make here. And had Ishmael been a law-abiding in the heart, he would have had respect, you see, because the law demands respect. And the laws of having a second wife chosen by the first one demands that the second one be subservient to the first one and obedient and show respect. And when she did not, there were laws to deal with it, you see, and that was bondage. And had they been from the heart appreciative of the fact that they are in the tents of Abraham and are abundantly blessed, and she has the honor and privilege, you know, to serve Sarah, you see, things would have been different. And that's in essence is the same story also with the Gentiles. You know, they would recognize Israel as a people of God and will come to them as the light of the world and will come to the teachers that have come out of Israel, if the teachers sent from God and show respect for them, you know, they wouldn't be in bondage. But they will be free. Free, you know, from the sickness and disease and curses that come upon them and all the afflictions that they bring upon themselves. And so he's trying to, you know, make them understand it. Look, you know, the kind of life that you said before that, and God gave you an opportunity, just like he gave Hagar, to live in a better surroundings, better atmosphere, a better life. And so show respect for that law. Show respect for the master. Show respect, you know, for the teachings of the nation. So show respect for the teachers that gave you this information. And they began to backslide, unfortunately, into what they thought was freedom, but actually it was bondage. As I said, for this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia and corresponds to Jerusalem, which now is and is in bondage with her children. So Jerusalem, in the days of old, was symbolic of the nation of Israel, and they were still all under bondage to the law that was given in Sinai. We're not talking about the entirety of it. We're not talking about the Ten. We're not talking about the statutes and judgments, the major ones. We're talking about the ritualistic part of it that were given to them because they were rebellious in many ways. You know, we're not circumcised from the heart. And so this Jerusalem, speaking about the nation and the people, in that particular case, it was the Jews, because all Israel, the northern kingdom, went astray. And the Jews were left behind, and so they are symbolically in bondage. Just like in Mount Sinai with the same covenant. But Jerusalem above is free. In other words, the spirit that comes from above, the truth that comes from above, the bread of heaven that comes from above, you see, that's free. And her children, likewise, will be free. Free from all these do's and don'ts that were given to them when they were rebellious, as little children. And so it says, but Jerusalem above is free, which is the mother of us all. So now we're not going to be fed by physical Jerusalem with all the limitations and do's and don'ts, but we're going to be fed by spiritual Jerusalem. And obviously that comes from above, because this is where God is. This is where Jesus Christ is. And she is the mother of us all. Later on, people in their confusion began to think of the church as being the mother, and they call the church the mother. You see, how can she be the mother when she's not married yet? Well, that's harlotry. That's why God calls, you know, the false religion the whore. You know, and her daughters, harlots. They're the ones that mess around. You see, but the bride of Jesus Christ is still a virgin. She's not a mother. She doesn't mess around. She's awaiting marriage. And a lot of people don't understand it, and so they make the church, because, you know, this is the false church concept, and unfortunately many among the people of God have swallowed the same concept and believe it, which is a pagan doctrine. You see, from Babylon there was that concept of the mother and child, and then the Babylonian religion was considered also as the mother, and it became the mother of all religions on the face of the earth. And then there was a continuation of that false mother in Rome. And people to this very day are attached to it, and they don't realize it. Instead of realizing, no, you know, our mother is up in heaven. And it's not the church. It's God. It's Jesus Christ. It's their teachings. That's our mother. And the people of Israel, as long as they were physical, they looked at Jerusalem as their mother. You see, they did not consider the church, so to speak, the mother, Jerusalem. That means where the Levites were, where the temple was, where the teachings came from, which were received, you know, by God on Mount Sinai. So even there, they didn't look on Israel as being the mother in that sense. Although symbolically, it is regarded that way. The mother for all nations of the earth, and it will be in the future, but only after the marriage, not before that. While physical Israel could have been the mother of all nations, if they brought the light of God that was given to them, to all mankind. But in essence, we have to understand that the church is not the mother. You see, it's the teachings that come from above. This is what mothers us. This is what feeds us. Jesus Christ is, you know, he's our bread. The church is not our bread. A lot of people are confused about it, and they are in bondage in that sense to an organization that claims to be the mother, and they're afraid to live in because of that, because they're confused. You should be afraid to live the teachings of God, not an organization, because the teachings of God is what constitutes the mother, especially in the person or the epitome of it, that is Jesus Christ. And so in verse 27 he says, "For it is written, Rejoice, O barren, you who do not bear. Break forth and shout, you who are not in labor, for the desolate has many more children than she who has a husband." Now Israel was married to God, but Israel was not bearing fruit as it should have, and there weren't many spiritual children coming out of that physical Israel. But the few that came, they came out of God. You see? And so that future mother that is going to be Israel, the Israel of God and Jerusalem, now had only very few, but in the future it will have many. Because in other words, all the children of God that are now children of physical Israel will become children of spiritual Israel, or spiritual Jerusalem. And that comes from God, and it's not a human organization. Then later on, when they marry Jesus Christ, when they marry the God who brought that information from God, that food, who acts like the mother, then they will become a mother for the rest of mankind. And that's why the scripture is written in that way. Now it is barren because there are only very few who are spiritual, the majority are not. While the physical, the children of the physical are many, that's going to be reversed. And so he says, for many more children, that is in the future, than she who has a husband. Now, we brethren, as Isaac was, are children of promise. You see? In other words, it is by the will of God that we were brought into existence, so to speak. Physically, we're already here, but spiritually, it's by the will of God. So that was a promise that God was making to redeem all of his children and to bring many sons to glory. But is he who was born according to the flesh then persecuted him, speaking about Ishmael? In other words, had he been of the Spirit, had he been grateful, had he been obedient, had he been like Abraham, his father, he would not have done that. And so he says, that's the way people are in the world. If they were obedient to God from the heart, they would have not have persecuted us. But since they are not, they are children of the flesh, and not of the Spirit, not of promise. And that includes also the Jewish community, unfortunately, where the majority of them continued and resisted that birth from the Spirit and preferred to remain children of the flesh. Well, and being so, they persecuted those who were of the Spirit. Because, you know, the attitude is, you know, whom do you think you are? What makes you think that you are better than I am? You know, I'm the child of Abraham. Who are you? And Ishmael was feeling the same thing. You know, I'm the firstborn. You know, you little Isaac, whom do you think you are? You're not the firstborn, I'm the firstborn. And so you see that arrogance and attitude that was there. And here the Galatians apparently did not fully comprehend, as they should have, these matters. And they were going back, and many of them, unfortunately, being led astray to believe that unless they become children of bondage, all the do's and don'ts that God gave to rebellious children, they cannot be children of God. So he's explaining that to them, that he who was of the flesh, according to the flesh, persecuted him who was born according to the Spirit, even so it is now. And as a matter of fact, even the children of Judah, who are now of the Spirit, were being persecuted by their own brothers. And both of them were children of Israel, children of Jerusalem, children of Judah, children of that mother, children of Sinai, only now some of them became children of Jerusalem above. In other words, the teachings came from the one that came from above, the one that came and lived in the flesh, that said that he was a heavenly bread that came from above. And so, now you see a difference between them. The children of the flesh became the children of the Spirit, and Ishmael could have been that, but he rejected that by his own actions and his own attitude and that of his mother. And so he said, nevertheless, in verse 30, what does the scripture say? And in essence, it's Sarah that was saying that, but he's referring to her statement, cast out the bondwoman and her son. In other words, he's saying also that she was inspired by God to say that. those emotions of the righteous indignation that was in her was an expression of the feelings of God toward people with such an attitude. Even his own people, when they had that kind of an attitude and they rebelled against him, he cast them out. And he's not a respecter of persons. And so she said, cast out the bondwoman and her son. Because both of them were guilty. For the son of the bondwoman shall not be heir with the son of the free woman. You see, God promised Abraham and made a covenant with him, and promised Sarah and made a covenant with her too. Not only with Abraham, that of both of them he's going to bring a seed, and of both of them he's going to bring nations and peoples and kings and all the future descendants. So she obviously is functioning here within her prerogative to do that and to say that with that proper understanding. And people who are not willing to behave themselves in our presence and be grateful have no business being with us. And so she, in essence, was more righteous in this understanding than Abraham was, who, you know, just had the fatherly feelings toward Ishmael, and in the process he forgot that their attitude is not according to God, and he should have treated that earlier. So he himself, you know, was not properly dealing with the matter. And so then, brethren, he says, we are not children of the bondwoman, but of the free, which means we should not be acting like the children of the bondwoman, and we should not come under bondage. It does not mean we should not be obedient, but we should not have those attitudes, we should not have, you know, that spirit that Ishmael had. And because he had that spirit and that attitude, and God resented that as well, not only Sarah, therefore God backed her and inspired her to say those things and to do those things and to act in that manner, and he did not go along with Abraham, who felt very bad about the whole matter. And so, while Sarah is saying, cast out this bondwoman, in verse 10 of Genesis 21, and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. Well, the feelings of Abraham were different. Verse 11 we read, and the thing was very grievous in Abraham's sight on account of his son. So he totally disagreed with that. You see? Well, in essence, without realizing it, he totally disagreed with God. Because God is not a respecter of person, and Abraham was. You know, the father of the faithful. And God is not a respecter of his own son, Isaac. You know, when Isaac doesn't behave himself, that is speaking about the descendants of Isaac. The children of Israel. In that case, in the days of Paul, the children of Israel from Judah. You see, God was not pleased with them, and God cast them out. And cast out the northern kingdom. But he's going to bring them back. And so he's going to restore also Ishmael to himself, as well as he's going to restore all humanity. But while they have this attitude, God doesn't play games with them, and he's not going to play games with any one of us. If we have that attitude of ungrateful feelings toward the law of God, the teachings of God, you know, thinking, well, we are in the Spirit, we don't need to obey that, and so we become haughty and arrogant, and God has no place for people like that. And so Abraham was very grievous. It was very grievous in his sight. He didn't like it at all. As a matter of fact, the word in Hebrew, it says, vayera hadavar, which means, you know, and that thing was very evil. Very bad in his sight. He looked upon it very badly. So he did not agree with his wife Sarah. So Sarah now has an ally. Verse 12. And God said unto Abraham, let it not be grievous. Let it not be bad. Don't think about it as being evil in your sight because of the lad and because of your bondwoman. So now the two, he's going to lose both of them. And obviously he felt very bad about it. But he was not considering the consequences. And he was not looking upon it from God's point of view. You know, people who behave in that manner don't deserve to be in the presence of children who are free, children of promise. Don't deserve to receive the blessings of God. You see? Sarah would have never said that. If Hagar behaved herself, she would have loved her. And if Ishmael behaved himself, she would have loved him as her own son, because he was her own son legally. So she was expressing, in essence, the attitude of God, the feelings of God. And so that's, again, what Paul was trying to explain to the Galatians, that even though Israel is the son of God and the Jews are the people of God, because of their attitude,
You know, they're in bondage. They have chosen to be in bondage, and we should not come under the same kind of bondage. And God is not a respecter of persons. And so God said unto Abraham, let it not be grievous in your sight because of the lad and because of your bondwoman. And all that Sarah says unto you, hearken unto her voice, for in Isaac shall your seed be called to you. And basically, you see two points here. Whatever Sarah tells you, she's right, you're wrong. You listen to her. And of course, humorously, the rabbis are looking at this statement and they said, well, if you want to have peace in your house, listen to your wife. Well, you should listen to anybody that speaks right, for that matter. And sometimes, you know, the husbands are acting like Ishmael, and the wife may be right. And never occurs to them to think that way. And I think because they are the men of the house, they're always right. Well, there are times where the wife is right, and there are probably many times where the wife is right, and then the husband is not. And when we submit to the will of God, then we listen. And then we have peace. And so this is one point that the rabbis were making here. And it's a good point. And then God also tells Abraham that in Isaac shall his seed be called to you. And that's an exact translation of what it says here. Ki b'Yitzchak ikara lecha zera. In other words, it is in Isaac that you shall have, that seed shall be called unto you. And in other words, you can say, your descendants shall be named after Isaac. Of course, they are named also after Abraham. And of course, they are named also after the son of Isaac, Jacob. You see? So it's applicable to the three of them. But he made a point also here in this case, because Isaac is on the scene and Jacob is not yet. And later on, you see, through the prophets, you know, you don't see many of those statements, but there are a few here. And some of them stuck with some of the children of Israel to this very day. Saxon, you know, Isaac's son. And the book of Amos, the prophet Amos, he speaks about this matter, where he's revealing that God was referring to his people as the children of Isaac. In Amos chapter 7 and verse 9, where God speaks about his people Israel, the northern kingdom. And in essence, Amos speaks about all of Israel, not only the northern kingdom, because all of Israel were the children of Isaac. And some like to apply it only to the northern kingdom, and they're forgetting that they're all children of Isaac. And for that matter, all the children of Edom are the children of Isaac. And so we read in verse 9, the high places of Isaac shall be desolate, and the sanctuaries of Israel shall be waste, that it shall be laid waste. So Isaac and Israel are synonymous here because they are. Israel is the son of Isaac. The nation was called after Israel, and also being children of Isaac, they were called after Isaac also. And then later on, when the children of Israel went into captivity, they were called children of Israel, but they were also called the children of Isaac. And then later on, it developed into Isaac's son, or Saxon for short. You see, as languages develop, you know, they alter a little bit the terminology. So you've got all those Saxons, and there are Anglo-Saxons, and there are other Saxons, and the Edomites will be Edomite Saxon, and the Jews will be, you know, Jewish Saxons, in other words, all children of Isaac. You know, some people think that this terminology applies only to the Anglo-Saxons. Anybody who is a child of Isaac is a child of Isaac. That's all there is to it. And presently, as it is, even the Anglo-Saxons, you know, spiritually speaking, they are not his children, only physically. And spiritually speaking, you know, obviously the Jews are not his children, only the ones who are spiritual. And spiritually speaking, you know, all the children of Edom, who are the sons of Isaac, you know, twin brother of Jacob, they're not the sons of Isaac, but when they are restored to their father Isaac and his faith, well, again, you know, all of them will be called the sons of Isaac. All of them are Saxons, you know, in modern terminology, as has been used for many, many centuries anyway. And sometimes we don't think about it, and we like to divide things. Anyway, this is what he's saying here. And then also in verse 17, or that is in verse 16, the prophet repeats the same matter. And this is what God says in verse 16. Now, therefore, hear the word of the Lord. You say, do not prophesy against Israel. I see, all of them, all of Israel. Because to whom Amos is speaking? He's speaking to Amaziah, who is a prophet in Israel, the northern kingdom, and Amos is in the northern kingdom speaking to them. And he's telling him, you know, you go to Judah because you're speaking against us. And then in verse 16, God says, and obviously speaking in particular now about the northern kingdom, Israel, which is also called the house of Isaac. And for that matter, you know, all of them are children of Isaac, and all of them are children of Israel. And so he's saying, now, therefore, hear the word of the Lord. You say, do not prophesy against Israel, that is the northern kingdom in specific, and do not spout against the house of Isaac. And so, as you see, that the terminology is applied in this case to the northern kingdom. Anyway, we're going to stop at this point. This is again Mordecai Joseph, and we'll continue the next lesson from this passage here.